So the question was asked, how does a Jew deal with the Holocaust? And being that this is our first 10 days at Machon Meir, so I have to start from scratch. And that puts me in a quandary. Like I got to really start from the beginning. So, four score and... I'm joking. Well, first point you have to know is a rule. When it comes to learning areas of philosophy in general, I would say Jewish philosophy, but I think it's correct advice, irrespective of what philosophy you're learning. There are many ways to the top of the mountain. Some people climb from the left, some from the right, some from the side. There are many ways to the top of the mountain. You can't say one way is correct. What's easier for me might be harder for you. What's easier for you might be harder for me. And the same is true with philosophy. Now we're talking about Jewish philosophy. When we try to understand things, so sometimes what resonates with one person doesn't resonate with another. It could be that the explanations I give will resonate with 60% of the people sitting here. What do the rest of the 40% do? So what you have to do is be responsible adults and say, I have a question, he didn't answer me. If he didn't answer me and what he said doesn't sit well with me, I got to move on and find someone else who will answer me. You have a plethora of rabbis at the Machon. You're in Jerusalem, the holiest city of the world. You can ask many rabbis. Yaakov Cheskis will vouch. He's taken the time. He had questions he wanted other answers for. He took the time. He got the top Kabbalists, right? True? I'm saying it bothered him. He put in the time. He put in the effort. He waited online, and he finally got in and asked his questions. He wanted a Kabbalistic perspective on certain questions. You can get there. So I'm just saying that's my disclaimer when we begin. I'm going to try to answer as best as my ability. That doesn't absolve you from your responsibility of discovering the answer. If what I said isn't good enough for you, that's legitimate. That's fine. That doesn't mean you give up. And a question is not an answer. Don't be a teenager. Teenagers say, oh, I have a question. If you can't answer it now, then obviously this is all a lie. Nah, come on, grow up. You're asking me questions that are age old. You're asking me questions that encompass all of life. And you want an answer in 20 minutes. Come on. Learn a little bit. Understand a little bit. And then you'll understand. You can't assume you'll get it all now. Oh, if it was real, you'd be able to explain it to me. Maybe I could explain it and you can't understand. So I'm saying that you know, there's a... So let's be honest, let's be intellectual, let's be responsible, and we're going to try to understand as best as we can, but with that in mind, let's remember that there are many ways to the top of the mountain. For example, I will not take the Hasidic approach, but maybe what you need to hear is the Hasidic approach. I try to be dry and philosophical, and that might not be good for you. So in the most positive sense of the word, the door is open. Not that you're welcome to leave, but that you're welcome to explore beyond. Don't just take it. Nathanael Frankenthal is not God's mouthpiece, right? Nathanael Frankenthal is going to explain it as best as his ability. I will try, I will do my best, and there are many other people who can explain it different than I can. And that might be better for you. Okay? So, with that introduction, now let's begin. So, our question really begins with creation. I want to go back to the beginning.
You really meant that?
Yes. Because I'll tell you, I can work the other way. I can start with the Holocaust, and you'll take me back to creation. So I'd rather start, I want to preclude your questions. I'm building up, I'm serious here. I want to build up the answer. I can work the other way. I can give you one answer, and then you'll ask a question, and then I'll give another answer, and you'll ask another question. And we'll end up here anyway. So let me start here. The obvious question, and again I'm reminding you, just because you have a question doesn't mean you have an answer. An unanswered question is not an answer. An unanswered question is a demand to research more. You don't have an answer, so keep looking. The problem is when people decide, I don't have an answer, so that's it, I'm done with this. Why? Look some more. Understand some more. How much time did you invest? This is something that's a few millennium old. It's got the wisdom of millions. And you think that you have to be able to understand it in one evening of 20 minutes. Okay, it doesn't exactly work that way. So, not you, obviously. I mean, in general. Okay, so now, let's begin. There's an obvious question. Why did God create a world? And the answer is, you don't know. Ha! So you'll say, wait, Rabbi, don't you have an answer? And the answer is, I do and I don't. There are two answers to that question. On a true level, I don't understand God. I don't know why he created a world. I can't answer that question. So then you'll ask me, so then why are all these answers out there? And the answer is, God gave me a perspective on why he created the world. I can have step two. I can understand what my perspective on creation should be. So one person will say, sure, it's a very cruel joke. And the next person will say, no, it's the Garden of Eden. And a third person will say, many other reasons. So in Judaism, we have a few general approaches. We say God created the world to give us blessing. God created the world so we could accomplish, so we could create a world to come. There are a few perspectives that are not so different from one another, but those are perspectives. Again, you want the real answer? Maybe one day God will reveal it to us, and maybe not. The fact that I don't have an answer doesn't mean I can't have a perspective. And that perspective can make a world of a difference. If I'm living in a world where God says, okay, fight it out, guys. So then I got to build the biggest militia. I'm going to be the biggest gangster. It's survival of the fittest. So it's a dog-eat-dog world. I better be a big dog, right? My perspective will define my behavior. Perspective is huge. So very often when we speak about concepts, we have to discern between the ultimate truth and perspective. Perspective is important, not to be confused with the ultimate truth. So far, we're all together? Yes? Okay. Now, we move on to step two. God created a world where there's good and there's bad. There's happiness and there's pain. So you're taking an extreme example of a Holocaust. You don't have to go so far. When I started my class in the book of Job, in Koch of Yaakov, so I said, the class has to be viewed from a children's oncology ward. Whatever answer you're going to give me, you have to answer me why this three-year-old is suffering. Okay? If you want to give me a real answer to that, you have to answer that. If you didn't answer that, you didn't answer anything. Okay? Now, I want to pause with the questions and shift to another realm for a minute. We'll come back to the questions, okay? So far, we're all together? Okay. Imagine a parent who... I'll tell you a true story. Okay. I was dating my wife. And we were holding a week before engagement. And I called one of my rabbeim with a question. There was something that we were discussing in the dating between us. And I wasn't sure how we should work it out. And I said to him, look, I'm not sure. Here's the question. So he said to me, I want to answer you tomorrow afternoon. Where will you be tomorrow afternoon? This and this time. So I'm in Merkaz Arav. I told him, look, I'm generally in the library learning. If you tell me what time, I'll come to the phone at that time. He said, no, you don't have to come anywhere. Be in the Merkaz Arav library. Just have your cell phone on. I'll call you then, and then I want to address the question. Now, just so you have the backdrop to the scene, my wife and I were dating when 9/11 happened. No one knew the safety of air travel. No one knew what was waiting for us. And this whole story is taking place a few weeks after 9/11, when air travel is very uncertain in the world. Comes the next afternoon, I get a phone call. I look at the number, it's an Israeli number. I answer the phone, it's him. He asks me, where are you? I say, I'm in the library. Where are you? He says, I'm standing outside the library. He boarded a plane, came to Israel to talk to me for 2 hours because it was so important to him that I understand this point correctly, that I not make a mistake. He realized I was dating someone who I would probably marry. He wanted to make sure I understood it correctly. He didn't tell me. He never asked me for a penny. He boarded a plane. He went and got witnesses that he was boarding the plane in case something happens to the plane. His wife shouldn't be in Aguna. She shouldn't be left alone. So he also thought there's a chance that this isn't too safe, right? He got witnesses when he boarded the plane. And he came across the Atlantic to talk to me for 2 hours, went back to the airport and flew back to the United States. True story.
Who's this Rav?
Who's this Rav, right? That's what you all want to know. No. Now. No. Now. Can you imagine what happens 5, 6, 7, 10 years down the road when he does something that I don't exactly understand why he did that to me? What are my thoughts? Or do I say, you know, he's won my trust. I don't get him. What can I do? But that's it. You know, certain things you do. That's it. You won. You say this way, I'll go this way. You say that way, I'll go that way. I don't know. You can understand that such a trust can be built, right? So let's zoom in to a specific story. Okay? There's a man who, child prodigy, at the age of 3, he's already giving lectures. And they view him as a threat to national security because he's developing a philosophy that threatens national security. So they put him in jail. And in jail he keeps preaching and he writes a whole work of his philosophy. And then they tell him, you're going to spend, you have to turn back on your philosophy. And if not, after 7 years, we're putting you in a dungeon for 7 years. You're not going to see daylight. And after 7 years, we'll expose you suddenly to broad daylight. And you know what happens then? People go blind. And he doesn't give in. Now, this child prodigy was Avraham Avinu. This was Avraham Avinu's youth. His own father, his own family turned against him. His father gave him over to be killed. And then Avram comes out and he's thrown into the furnace and we know he walked out alive. So suddenly, wow, he walked out alive. And then God appears to him and says, go to Israel. Things will be great for you. You'll have wealth. You'll have fame. You'll have children. He migrates to Israel, loses everything he owns, becomes so impoverished he has to migrate down to Egypt. And then his wife is abducted. What's Avraham Avinu supposed to say? God said, I'm going to have children. I don't even have a wife. God said, I'm going to be wealthy. I don't even have the most basic thing. My own wife is abducted by the king. How do you live with that? True story. I'm saying, how do you live with that? And the Torah paints the story out for us. The Torah says, Lech lecho me'atzecho mimolatecho mi'beit avicha, va'rechecha, I will bless you, va'gadla shemecha, I'll make you famous, va'yevracha, you'll be wealthy. Wait a second. Pretty harsh. What's the Torah teaching us? We are supposed to build an understanding that God runs the world. Did you hear the word understanding there? That was an important word. I didn't say faith. I didn't say belief. I didn't say emunah. I said understanding. Okay? We're supposed to build an understanding that can stand up to situations where we don't understand what God's doing. And the most extreme example of that is God tells him, Ki bi Yitzchak yikareh lechazara, your future's in Isaac. And then God says, go sacrifice him. Says the Medrash, after the Akedah, Avram turned to God and said, you know, when I was standing there, I did not know what you wanted from me. We think how Avram must have had an answer. The answer is he didn't have an answer. It says in the Medrash he did not. He stood there, right there. Guys, you see that? There's the kotel. He stood a few feet beyond that. Avram Avinu was standing there. And he says to his son, God told me I'm supposed to do this to you. And his son says, okay, if God says, then we got to do it. But, you know, I'm human. I might flinch. Do me a favor. Tie my hands and feet so I don't flinch. That would really be pointless. And Avram's standing there and he's crying. Yeah, the Medrash says Avram's crying. The tears are dripping down on the blade. Yitzchak's crying. And Yitzchak says, Dad, just one second. I just want to ask you one thing. When you tell mom, make sure she's not next to a pit or a cliff because she might do something bad to herself. You got to tell her when she's sitting down. Tell her when things are calm. Figure out how you're going to tell her. This is the conversation up there. They both pray. They both don't want him to die. They davened. We say it. We're going to say now in Slichos. Mi shana lavam avinu ba'ar moriah hu ya'aneinu or ya'ane etchem sfaradim, right? He who answered Avram, what did he answer? Avram was praying, God, I don't want to do this. If you want me to do it, I'll do it. But obviously I don't want to, so I'm going to pray about this. And his prayers were answered. Now, wait, Avram, so you don't understand what God wants of you? I know he wants me to do this. But you don't understand how that works with your other perception of God, right? I don't. Oh, so you don't understand God? No, I don't. How could you live with not understanding God? Well, I've worked it out. He runs the world and I have to do what he says, whether I understand it or not. If I've reached a point where I know that he runs the world, then I can deal even though I don't understand him. And that's why this was the 10th test. Because this was the test where it's already God contradicting himself. It's very direct. He said, he is your future. And then he said, slaughter him. That's pretty direct. Now, Avraham Avinu doesn't have answers, but he has an understanding. He knows God's running the world. He knows he's sober. The Medrash says he's en route. He has 3 days. God doesn't do it in a flash. He purposely gives him time to think. And along comes an old man and says, Abraham, don't you think you might be hallucinating here? I mean, your whole life you were telling people that they should not be slaughtering their kids to pagan gods. Don't you think maybe something's gone awry in the wiring up there? Avram, how could you do this? Okay, Medrash says, someone came to Yitzchak and said, the old man's gone mad. How are you listening to him? But no, Avram knew he wasn't mad. Yitzchak knew he wasn't mad. And they both knew God said it. And they both knew they don't understand it. But if that's what he says, they're willing to do it. Can we understand that? Until here, are we all together or not yet? That's my question to you before I move on. I'll get to you in a second, Mayor. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Okay, yes, Mayor.
How did Yitzchak know that Avram wasn't beasting?
That's a great question. Maimonides discusses that. That's not a question for now. He says, how did Yitzchak know? Avram knew God spoke to him, but how did Yitzchak know? Great question. I just don't want to go on that 5-minute tangent. So not such a long answer. But, yes.
I always heard that Abraham knew from the start that he wouldn't have to do this.
No, so I didn't hear that. And the Talmud doesn't seem to say that. And Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer doesn't seem to say that. So I don't know where you got that from. I don't know. Maybe they told it to you. It's a nice way to hear the story. I don't know who told you that. But I don't know. I know of sources that say not that way. And I don't know of any source that says yes that way. I know that Avram hoped it would end up that way. I know that Avram spoke as though it would end up that way. But not that he knew it would end up that way. No. No.
Didn't Avram say it didn't happen at all?
I am unaware of any source that says that. So please, if you are aware of such source, show me. Good, show me. Yes. I could tell you where the Rambam says it did happen. Both in Halacha and in the Guide to the Perplexed. So, but if you're saying there's another source, show me. Yes.
The passage from the Akedah says that Abraham saw the Makom from afar, saw Hashem from afar. So it's like Hashem seemed distant to him when he was on the way to the Akedah.
I'm listening. You're just making a comment.
Yeah.
Okay. Very nice. We had 2 classes on that. The Rebbe of Slonim has a whole piece on that. That's very nice. Yeah, that's a Hasidic thought. Yes. So far we're all together? What time do we have to pack out of here? 1:30? So let's clean up. We'll do a part 2 outside. We'll go sit there a few nice squares. We'll sit there and we'll do part 2. I can't, look, I don't want the guard to kick us out and we won't have ended up cleaning up here. We have to clean up. We can't leave the place a mess. Let's clean up and then we'll see if we have